This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. A leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has asked, where in history have we seen a war machine as massive as that of the U.S. fully arming a regime as barbaric and ruthless as Israel and failing to crush a modestly armed resistance in a small area like Gaza? Ayatollah Khamenei said they did manage to kill thousands of children, ruin homes, hospitals, mosques, and other infrastructure, and commit dozens of war crimes, but still came up empty. He said resistance simply exposed both its strength and their incompetence in this campaign of genocide imposed by the U.S. and Israel on the Palestinian people. Iranian leaders' remarks will be the focus of today's Spotlight program.
After 15 months of relentless and indiscriminate bombardment, Gaza has finally experienced a pause in Israel's aggressive military campaign, which many have labeled a U.S.-Israeli genocide. The ceasefire comes on the heels of a deal struck between Israel and Hamas, the very group the regime vowed to eradicate during the war. Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, hailed Gaza's resilience and victory as a myth unfolding before the eyes of the world, proving that resistance is strong and cannot be eliminated. The leader added that if the U.S. had not provided an all-out support to Israel, the regime would have been brought to its knees. In the first weeks of the war's onset, the U.S. support for Israel included billions of dollars worth of military aid and advanced weaponry that raised alarms about their use in densely populated areas like Gaza. Moreover, Washington's repeated use of its veto power, blocking four ceasefire resolutions at the U.N. Security Council, only intensified the humanitarian crisis in the besieged strip.
This is the reality of the entity. It's the structure made, designed by the U.S. imperialism in the region to actually murder Palestinians and, in a bigger picture, murder West Asian indigenous people so that the imperialist program is going to win the region, is going to occupy the region and get what they have been dreaming of. So there is no surprise for us that they actually do whatever they can to support the bloodshed.
The new U.S. President Donald Trump has promised change and peace during his presidential campaign. However, his administration's lineup, including pro-Israel figures like Ambassador Mike Huckabee, who has previously denied Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories, and Pentagon chief pick Pete Hegseth, known for his staunch support of Israel, suggests a continued commitment to the status quo. As deadly Israeli raids persist in the occupied West Bank, it appears that while the battleground may shift, the U.S.-backed Israeli war machine shows no sign of stopping. However, resistance in Gaza is setting an example that other Palestinians in the occupied territories should follow to achieve victory.
And now for our guests. Joining us is Mr. Ali Hamieh, writer and researcher, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And Batu Sobeti, activist and political analyst, joining us from London. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Batu, we'll start with you in London. The Iran's leader, he added that if the U.S., and I'm sure you heard in the report, had not provided all-out support to the Israeli entity, that the regime would have been brought to its knees in the first weeks of the war. Your initial assessment on these remarks?
Yes, good evening to you and to Ali Hamieh as well. If the U.S., we know that the Israeli occupation entity's collapse is inevitable if the U.S. decides to withdraw its support. Israel's operational boundaries are defined by the American interests. We know Israel cannot breathe without the American oxygen. It is enough for one to look at the sheer dependence of Israel on American weapons of mass destruction to understand this reality. And that is that Israel cannot survive a day of this war without US weapons. And we also saw how in these 15 months, the US sent its warships and its Delta forces to the region because the Israeli occupation entity genuinely cannot defend itself on its own. There were over 5,000 American troops on the ground in the start of the war in October 2023, when they planned to first ground invade. And we saw how America actually protected the Israeli occupation entity from Iranian missile attacks by intercepting those missiles and drones. So Israel cannot cross America's red lines, and Israel cannot drag America to its square. And we've already seen this in this war. So, for example, when America restrained Israel from reacting in an escalatory response to Iran's Operation True Promise 1 and 2, whereas we know that Israel's aim was to drag America to a wider war. And we also saw this with Trump forcing Netanyahu to sign the ceasefire deal that America agreed to, whereas Netanyahu and his extreme right-wing cabinet wanted to continue the war. So let's just remember Joe Biden's words, and that is, if there was no Israel, we would have to invent one to fulfill our interests. So we cannot think of Israel as an independent foreign entity. It is the US project for the region. And so for Israel to have won this war and to have secured the defeat of the resistance is something that's more important to America than it would be to even Israel itself. And that's why America supplies Israel with the unconditional weapons. The only difference here between America and the current Israeli occupation entity is in the methods of achieving this victory. But we know that it's a red line for America, for Israel to fall at the hands of the resistance. Why? Because it means that the resistance will fill the void in the region and the American interests in the region will be finished. So if America is to hold Israel accountable, it will hold Israel accountable due to its failures of not completely destroying the resistance infrastructure, as we're seeing.
Interesting take, Mr. Ali Hamieh. Thanks for your patience and welcome to the program. Same question to you, sir. How critical is and was America's support for Israel's genocide we just witnessed for 15 months in Gaza?
Greetings to you, to Mrs. Batul, and all audience. I would like to start at the beginning that what Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, it's absolutely true and very true. And I will enhance it by starting from the speech of Netanyahu on last July at the Congress when he went to United States to ask for help or their army will be defeated at the ground. and he asks for big help. Otherwise, if they are defeated, the United States will be defeated in the Middle East. That means that there were no confidence up to July 2024 on their infantry, on their military, on their battles, main battle tanks, and all other weapons. Even they were using a weapon of mass destruction, all international forbidden weapons supported by United States. We don't have to forget that the Sixth Fleet was all ready to fight on the Mediterranean, supported by the Fifth Fleet from the Gulf area, and also supported by some destroyer from the Seventh Fleet. That means that the United States used all its power that should be confronting the whole world, Russia and China and the whole big countries, in case of war. They bring it to the Mediterranean Sea in order to help Israel. Yes, it is a big defeat for the Israelis. Let's say a little comparison. If we see that the weapon, local made weapon against the Merkava and Nimr and Itan armored vehicles, let's see that small drone, homemade drones against a big targets inside the occupied territories. Let's say we saw that small group of Mujahideens or freedom fighters attacked at the 7th of October, the big division of Gaza, Zionist division, and they destroyed it all. With all this comparison between the small group of freedom fighters, it was less than 15,000 Mujahideen against 650,000 soldiers, Zionist soldiers. And we are talking about 360 square kilometers against Israel, against the fleets, the NATO fleets. I'm talking about British and American on the sea, supported and enhanced by the German and French, and also Italian. We have to focus on Mount Whitney, that the control and command ship that was exactly like 100 kilometers or 100 knots away from the Lebanese and the Palestinian shore. So it means after the 25th of July, instead of supporting Israel, the American took over and to fight direct fight against Lebanon, against Hamas, against Iraq, and especially against Yemen on Bab al-Mandab Sea, Red Sea. So we see in the comparison that, of course, when you go with a big high expectation saying that they will demolish Gaza, they want to finish Hamas, they want to defeat Hezbollah, they want to deter in Iran and stop in Yemen from using their weapon. All those achievements or targets or goal, they did not get realize or score any of their goals during the 15 month.
So like it means, and I'd like to put those same exact things you just alluded to Mrs. Subeiti, because Ayatollah Khamenei said the same exact thing, along with, and this was his first post-ceasefire speech, but also all the resistance factions, after the ceasefire, they made similar statements saying that the regime destroyed mosques, churches, homes, and markets. They managed to destroy everything and accomplish nothing that they said they were setting out to achieve, that today they failed to beat resistance, and all they actually did was just unleash a bunch of barbarism and ruthlessness on Gaza's population.
Absolutely. The Israeli occupier can only achieve their goals through forced transgression and fear. Israel relies on fear to achieve its goals. We have to understand Israel is not native to the land. It's a colonizer of the land. So it considers the very land its enemy. Anything indigenous, anything relating to the Palestinians is their enemy. I mean, including the olive trees, like who destroys trees? So Israel has demonstrated that it only understands the language of destruction. And so its very goal has been to eliminate the Palestinian people and to make the living conditions so uninhabitable to punish them as a kind of revenge. And we know that Israel was not able to achieve its military goals of defeating the Gazan resistance because the resistance are fearless. They have nothing to lose. They come at zero distance. With the very little that they have materially, they created big effects. And Israel lost this war because they did not manage to defeat the infrastructure of the resistance, but also because the very action of the resistance relies on the human disposition that rejects evil. So you can never really triumph over resistance because resistance ultimately is an idea that resides in the hearts of those who believe in it. Whether or not they possess the material capability to act in the material sense, that's secondary, but the belief itself is foundational, and no one can get rid of this belief. No amount of force, no extent of aggression carried out. In actual fact, the more aggression, the more that births resistance. And I think that has been the most important achievement of the Al-Aqsa flood. And that is the environment in which resistance has been spread and has been nurtured, not just in the region and across the Ummah, but globally. So even if to some degree the resistance was set back militarily due to the extent of the hits and the lack of parity and power, the resistance, we saw it continue to resist fearlessly. Why? Because the idea of resistance is stronger than everything. And that's why we saw the resistance, particularly in Gaza, come up with really innovative ideas, such as converting, you know, the remains of undetonated bombs into weapons that they can use against their enemies. So really, it's the spirit that is fighting all of the tanks. And that's what enabled the true victory.
And Mr. Hamia, today, since this ceasefire, we have seen so much settler violence in the occupied West Bank against the local Palestinians. We've seen the occupation forces set up dozens of checkpoints just to harass the local Palestinian population there. We've seen Israeli cabinet members, you very well know, very opposed, saying this is a victory for resistance. We have surrendered. They want to unite, push Netanyahu out so they could basically continue the war. If they do, if they succeed pushing Netanyahu out, and, you know, we've seen all this frustration from so many different sects in Israel. If they do somehow succeed in going back to this genocide, do you think that they have any chance of succeeding in ultimately ending resistance in Gaza?
Well, let's say first, this is the round is finished, almost finished, barely finished. But we are talking about long conflict is going on. And I think Israel will continue its war of pressure against the civilian and civilian infrastructure, against mosque, as Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said, against churches, mosques, schools, hospitals, to subjugate Hamas in Gaza. And I don't think that will work. We are talking about 160,000 casualties between Shaheed, martyrs, and wounded. And they did not give up. And we see what's the difference between the agreement that proposed on last May on 2024. It's still the same. Why it was refused and not imposed by United States on Israel, and now it is accepted by the Israelis. Why it was refused and why it's accepted now? And let's say we can say that the Israeli will continue their terror attack and as a terrorist state against the Palestinian. But let's say if in comparison to say that we have a legendary victory against them, yes, indeed, because let's see what happened in the World War II. When Germany lost, they imposed conditions against Germany. They imposed conditions against Japan. They didn't make a treaty or an agreement with Japan and Germany. Usually, if you you are victorious, you impose conditions against the counterpart. The Israeli and the Americans did not impose any conditions against Lebanon or against Hamas. It means we have at the same level of deterrence, and we can declare, let's say in parentheses, that Israel spend more than $67 billion against Hamas and Lebanon in this war. So it means if you want to fight against big and strong countries, you don't spend such amount in order to defeat your enemy.
And Batul Subeiti, I'd like to put that as a final question to you. Exactly what Sir Ali Hami has said. How does Israel accepting a May ceasefire 8 months later in January make the regime look? It's not a very good look, is it?
Right. The meaning of military victory for the entity would have been for it to achieve its objectives without needing to resort to a deal. It's exactly as you said, or what they call the quote-unquote complete victory. So I think ultimately the deals in Lebanon and Gaza signifies the resistance's victory. Why? Because it was not defeated, it did not surrender, and it forced a deal. So the resistances, both in Gaza and Lebanon, they were able to continue fighting. They had the will, they had the material capabilities to continue inflicting harm. But one can ultimately look and see the shame, the lowered heads of those within the entity who both, those who supported the ceasefire, they've acknowledged the failures. You've got the General Chief of Staff, Herzi Halevi of Israel, who resigned straight after the ceasefire. And at the same time, you have those within the entity who opposed the deal, like the extreme right-wing cabinet, like Ben-Gvir, who resigned, who described it as disgraceful and shameful. So on both sides. And at the end of the day, even if we look at Trump himself, he put the ceasefire agreement forward as it was like a kind of achievement, which tells us that the Gaza war itself has become a burden. It's become a source of shame for its supporters and its advocates. And that's because evil wars invite celebrations when they end. They're embarrassing, they're blameworthy for those who wage them. But just wars, they're a source of pride for their initiators. No matter how long they last, steadfastness in a cause is itself a victory. So the details of the deal are unimportant as much as the fact that the resistance's further development doesn't seek any permission from anyone. And historical and contemporary experiences prove to us that the resistance is stronger than its enemies' ability to dismantle it, despite all of their attempts. And the moral impact of the resistance's victory now, moving forward, will take on a new dimension. It's like a snowball. It will grow in the region and in the world. The resistance will grow, it will expand, and thousands from the resistance's environment will be ready to join, especially if that's mobilized effectively.
All right, thank you both for joining us in the program. Time has gotten the better of us. Stay safe to both of you, and thank you both. Ali Hamia, the writer and researcher, joining us from Beirut, and Batul Subeiti, activist and political analyst, joining us from London. And this brings us to the end of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Mother, don't cry for me, I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children stones in the sky, they say to their parents, don't worry, God is on our side. Palestine.
forever Palestine. Done to them, don't they know that God is with the oppressed and needy? He perished while the nations that rule through tyranny. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children of Palestine are fighting for our lives. They say to their parents, we know that Palestine is our right. They say to their parents, we'll fight for what is right. They say not to worry, God is on our side. Die for Palestine, Palestine, forever Palestine. This
title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hassan Al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari, alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the Infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are going through this beautiful conversation that Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam has, this beautiful dialogue with one of the most eminent scholars of the city of Qom by the name of Abul Hasan Ali ibn al-Husayn al-Qummi. Of course, Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam, he describes this individual in very beautiful and profound manners, considering him to be one of his trustees. And so Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam, he makes some recommendations to this great scholar. And so, of course, when speaking to a great scholar of a great level, who Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam calls a faqih, a jurisprudent, and so calling somebody a faqih, especially when an infallible and immaculate Imam alayhi salam calls an individual a faqih, this is a very big position and status that is being given to such an individual. So the recommendations that are to be given to such an individual should be such as profound, such as powerful, you know, and such as meaningful as that individual is. So Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam, he continues, he says that one should learn the religion, one should be certain of things, and that one should undertake the recitation of the Holy Quran. And so, you know, we're almost done with the conversation when it comes to these qualities and attributes. But this is important here, that we should learn the religion. We should not be the kind of individual who doesn't know anything about our religion. We should be educated Muslims, educated about our religion, our faith. We should, and that education that we acquire about Islam, about the Shia faith and the Shia madhab and the Shia school of thought, that education that we receive, that results in becoming certain of certain things, right? We kind of end up having a certain level of yaqeen, a certain level of certainty, because things now logically make sense to us. We have more knowledge. That knowledge, inshallah, with the grace and the blessings of Allah the Almighty, turns into wisdom, you know. And so we learn the religion and then we start to become certain of certain things. Now, here what's really interesting is this undertaking of the recitation of the Holy Quran. Now, this recitation of the Holy Quran, of course, in this conversation, it shows us the importance of reciting the Holy Quran. And so sometimes we just recite the Holy Quran, you know, because of just to recite it, just to be able to, you know, have these certain words come out of our mouths. When in reality, reciting the Holy Quran, yes, this has rewards, it has effects. Just looking at the Quran has effects, but the purpose is to be able to read and contemplate and learn from the Holy Quran, to take advice from the Holy Quran, to help ourselves via the Holy Quran. And so this is the importance of reciting the Holy Quran on a regular basis, as much as we can, you know. But the important thing is to have continuity in the recitation of the Holy Quran. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Let me share with you one example from a Christian family of Samarra. You see, Samarra is in the northern part from Baghdad. The Shia area, the present Iraqi situation, the way it is, Baghdad and south is all the way to Basra. This is the Shia area. North you go is the Kurdish area. In between, this is mostly Sunni area. Samarra happens to be in the Sunni area. And that's why the Daesh has first, you know, target for them on all this campaign that they had was Samarra. Then they would reach to Kadhimain and then go to Karbala and then Najaf. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala eliminated the problem, alhamdulillah, you know, during our own time. But there you will also see that there is a minority Christian community even now. Although because of ISIS, their number has decreased because of their, you know, migration outside Iraq. They have moved away. But they have been there for a long, long time. And even if you, for example, when you hear the caravan of Imam Hussein alayhi salam taken from Kufa to Damascus, there are points where they stopped close to the monasteries of the Christian monks. And these places, some of them have survived even now. And so, you know, presence of Christian individuals in Samarra and those areas those days is not really, you know, out of the norm. And so there was a person by the name of Anush al-Nasrani. He was actually one of the senior administrators of Mu'tamid Billah's administration, the government. And he actually he had two sons who were not feeling well. And he wanted the imam to come and visit him, his home, and pray for the shafa of the two sons. But he didn't find in himself the courage to approach the imam directly. So he asked the Khalifa, Mu'tamid, that if you can request him, you know, to fulfill my plea on this issue. And so Imam sent a messenger. He said, you know, there is a request by our administrator by the name of Anush. You know, so we will be taking you with honor and respect to his house. Why? Because the messenger told the imam that Anush al-Nasrani had told the Khalifa that I would like him to come and do the dua for my sons. Why? نَحْنُ نَتَبَرَّكُ بِدُعَاءِ بَقَايَ النُّبُوَّ وَالرِّسَالَةِ. Because we have a tradition among ourselves in their, you know, Christian community, that the dua of those who are the descendants of the Anbiya and the Rusul is more acceptable by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The survival and continued presence of Hamas in Gaza, despite the genocide and the relentless pressure from regional and international actors, signifies that the Palestinian people will not yield. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The footage emerging from the besieged Gaza Strip after nearly 16 months of live-streamed genocide speaks volumes about the resilience and defiance of the Palestinian people. Despite the catastrophic violence inflicted on the Palestinian nation for 471 days, the Gaza-based resistance movement Hamas remains firmly in power, demonstrating an unwavering presence. This is crucial, while countless scenarios have been floated about replacing Hamas with other Palestinian factions. It is clear now that Hamas was neither eliminated nor weakened. In fact, as even Western media outlets admit, the resistance movement has only become stronger and recruited a new batch of fighters in the recent months in the rebuilding phase. Despite the genocidal war, which massacred nearly 47,000 Palestinians in the past 475 days, most of them children and women, the Palestinian nation and the Palestinian resistance remain steadfast, sending a very powerful message to the occupation and the world at large. The moment the ceasefire came into effect on Sunday, 19th of January, the Zadin al-Qassam Brigade fighters were seen walking the streets of Gaza, asserting their dominance and sending a resounding message. They will not be erased, and they're the ones holding the line for the Palestinian resistance. Amid the US-funded genocide in Gaza, misinformation campaigns were rampant. The world, particularly the Palestinian people, was led to believe that Hamas was fading and that their exemplary sacrifices would be in vain. We continue with Press TV's coverage of this story. Opportunistic factions sought to take advantage of the situation,
hoping to break the backbone of resistance and establish a new order that would weaken Palestine's fight against imperialism. But the true beneficiaries of these misleading narratives were not the Palestinian people or the resistance axis. Instead, regional powers alongside the Western powers were the ones who hoped for the demise of Hamas and the defeat of Palestinian resistance. Let's examine the timeline of events and how it all unfolded. On 11th of November 2023, then Iranian President Said Ebrahim Raisi addressed the summit of Arab and Islamic nations in the Saudi Arabian capital Riyadh with a bold 10-point proposal aimed at ending the genocide in Gaza. The proposal included critical demands such as the cessation of the massacring of civilians, the lifting of the humanitarian blockade, the withdrawal of Israeli military forces from Gaza, and the establishment of an international court to prosecute the war criminals behind the atrocities. Additionally, President Ebrahim Raisi called for the arming of Gaza's population if Israel's crimes continued. This was a clear and principled stance in favour of Palestinian sovereignty, and it emphasised the urgent need to stop the genocide and end the long-standing occupation of Gaza. However, despite the humanitarian and moral urgency of martyred President Ebrahim Raisi's proposal, the response from certain Arab countries was disappointing. Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, countries that should have stood in solidarity with the Palestinians, instead voted against Iran's proposals. Their opposition revealed the deeply entrenched interests of the imperialist powers and their regional allies, who preferred to maintain the status quo of subservience to Zionism and Western influence. The website Palestine Chronicle has also covered this same story and tells us more. On 28th of November, the German state-run media outlet Deutsche Welle published an article outlining five potential scenarios for Gaza's future after the eventual defeat of the resistance movement Hamas. These scenarios were indicative of a clear imperialist agenda, with each one focusing on ways to neutralise Palestinian resistance and establish a pro-Western order. 1. Israel takes control of Gaza. The most extreme scenario involved Israel reoccupying Gaza, a move reminiscent of the period before 2005. Israel would assume full military control over Gaza. 2. Palestinian Authority governs Gaza. This would see the return of the Palestinian Authority, led by Mahmoud Abbas, to control the besieged Gaza Strip. 3. A joint administration by the United States, the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. This scenario envisioned a coalition of Western and regional powers stepping in to govern the Gaza Strip. It would represent a significant blow for Palestinian sovereignty and an attempt to replace the resistance movement Hamas with a compliant puppet regime. 4. United Nations-led administration of Gaza. In this scenario, the United Nations would assume control, establishing a transitional government akin to what was done in Kosovo or East Timor. And 5. Administration by Arab states. This scenario proposed that Arab countries, particularly Egypt and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, would step in to govern the Gaza Strip. These scenarios were designed to dilute Palestinian resistance and pave the way for a new order that would exclude the resistance movement Hamas and impose an artificial peace dictated by imperialist powers. The aim was clear: to erase Palestinian identity, to weaken Palestinian resistance, and impose a governance model that would align with Zionist and Western interests. In January of 2025, it became evident that the scenario most feared by the imperialist powers has come to fruition. The Hamas movement and Palestinian resistance have emerged victorious. The survival and continued presence of Hamas in Gaza, despite the genocide and the relentless pressure from the regional and international actors, signifies that the Palestinian people will not yield. The plots of the Zionists and their imperialist allies in the West to dismantle resistance have failed, and the struggle for Palestinian sovereignty endures. The final scenario, which the West had hoped to suppress, is a testament to the strength and resilience of the people of Gaza. Hamas's popularity and hold over the Gaza Strip is not just a military victory, but a symbol of defiance, resistance, and unwillingness to submit to foreign domination. Despite the interference from those who sought to exploit the bloodshed for their own political purposes, the Palestinian people remain resolute in their fight for freedom and justice. The camaraderie between Palestinians and the resistance fighters was evident on Sunday, 19th of January, as the Ezzedine al-Qassam Brigade fighters took to the streets of Gaza and released three Israeli female captives. The crowd in the background loudly cheered for them and hailed them for their heroics. The imperialist plot to eliminate resistance in Gaza has been thwarted, and the outcome serves as a powerful reminder that the fight for a free and sovereign Palestine will continue. The resistance axis has not only survived but has become stronger, securing its place as the cornerstone of Palestinian liberation in the face of overwhelming adversity.
Thank you.